Time to check out of the Boston sports scene. And to do that, we welcome in our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Do you like this heat, Chad?
I do not like this heat that much, but I just have to remind myself that in the winter, I am anticipating these days with great hope. So I can live with it. Just actually have the summer here.
All right. I think I would prefer snow, but this is too much.
Don't have to shovel heat.
That's true. You're right. Well, listen, so much going on. Let's start with the Red Sox. Wow, what a weekend that was. And boy, you naysayers at the Globe, you wrote them off at 0-3. I saw that on social media. Do people not read the things you write?
Yeah, I had to go back and look to see what I... I see what I wrote after that 0-3 start against the Orioles, because I think Shaughnessy basically wrote "Burn Down Fenway and Start from Scratch" or something along those lines. And I stuck to my guns that they were going to be better. I'll honestly admit I wasn't quite sure how it was going to go. I knew that they had much better organizational depth, that they had brought in people who were, sounds like backhanded compliment, but it's really not. They brought in people who were capable major leaguers, which, you know, they had auditions on the roster for pitching basically all last season, and they used 30 pitchers in 60 games. So I thought just by having league average confidence in some spots that they were going to be a better team, and having a quarterback, I think we underestimated how good their good players are a little bit. But yeah, I got some grief on Twitter today from somebody who had me confused with somebody else, which happens way too much for my liking. People would track what I say, write it down, so they don't have to come back and complain to me about something I didn't write later on.
Well, it was quite a weekend, and how much of this was really fueled by Brett Gardner's little shot at Alex Cora?
Yeah, it's weird. They shouldn't need that for motivation. It's surely innocuous, and you know, the Yankees kind of have a beef with the Astros. I mean, you can't necessarily say they stole a pennant from them, but they had some advantages for sure. They had the beat of the drum or the trash can on their side, and the Yankees have a rightful beef about that, even though they may not have ultimately won the series a couple of years ago. So I understand why the Yankees would have some frustration with Cora, and I thought it was interesting that Bogaerts, who is not someone who usually looks for outside motivation, doesn't really need it, and is really an even-keeled guy, which, as he's grown older, which just serves him really well, would kind of find motivation in that. But I think it tells you how much this team and this group is happy to have Alex Cora back, respects him as a manager and as a guy who is actually a friend and mentor to quite a few players on this team. And I think the lesson we learned here is if you talk slightly bad about Alex Cora, even if he might deserve it in certain circumstances, Red Sox players are going to have his back.
Xander Bogaerts, for my money, is the MVP right now.
Yeah, he is great, isn't it? Because this is a guy who is a tremendous prospect, helped them win the World Series in 2013 when he came up. I always thought he was their second-best hitter to Ortiz in the postseason that year. And he had a big triple off Max Scherzer in the ALCS, and just looked like he was going to be an instant superstar. And he had that really rough second season where he had to play third base. They brought Steven Drew back, and he didn't really handle it well. And this is a kid who, ever since then, has just worked hard and tried to get better and better at everything. You know, people have thought he had to move off shortstop, that he's going to outgrow shortstop. And, you know, he's not great there. He's average, but he's good enough to be able to stay there. And that's from his hard work. He used to work with John McDonald, who was a longtime fielder. He was with the Red Sox for a little bit. He would go out and work with him before games every single day. And we've seen the progress he's made as a hitter. It's great to see, because he's somebody who came up with a really high reputation and has lived up to every bit of his promise. And when his career is over, he's going to be regarded as an all-time great Red Sox. He's in the argument for the shortstop they've ever had already.
One of the things they have got to work on, and they've tried different people there, but it doesn't seem to be working. They can't find a leadoff hitter.
Yeah. sometimes there's an easy solution for that, which is just move your best hitters up a spot. You know, I know Alex Verdugo really doesn't like leading off, but he's been effective there the times that he uses on base percentage is around 350, which is fine. It's certainly better than what Kike Hernandez has been doing. And, you could always move Devers up a little bit higher in the lineup, maybe not leadoff, but he's probably a better hitter than somebody who should be hitting fifth. Don't put somebody there who's, doesn't have on-base capabilities. And Hernandez is a good player, does a lot of things to help you win, can play defense well, bunch of positions, energy guy, runs the base as well. But getting on base is not his greatest attribute. So we've probably seen the last time with him at the top of the lineup.
We're talking with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. All right, we've seen lots of speculation out there, but who's on your short list of the next Celtics coach?
I'm on the anybody but Jason Kidd camp.
I'm with you on that, yes.
Bring back, I should change that. Anybody who thinks John Calipari would be a good hire.
Oh, God.
He's good. He wins some of the time when he has all the best players. I don't think he's somebody who's going to win a lot of games when things are even. We saw that during his Nets tenure. Rick Pitino. Let's put it this way. Rick Pitino is a better NBA coach than John Calipari by miles. So I like Billups, Chauncey Billups. Not a ton of experience, but a really smart basketball guy. He's been on the bench with the Clippers, learning under Ty Lue. I like Sam Cassell, who has a lot of the same interpersonal skills and respect around the league that Billups does. He's an assistant for Doc with the Sixers. Probably would get a pretty great reference there, and he's already known by Boston ownership from his time here with the LA champs. So I think they're possible. I think Phil Austin would be really interesting if she's up for leaving Duke, and she's only been there for, a year. But she was really missed on the staff this year. She worked a ton with Romeo Langford. She gets a lot of credit from Jaylen Brown for helping him develop his various skills. He's a guy who's gotten better and better at everything during his career, especially handling the ball, and she was big on that, working with him. So I think she might have a shot here. Becky Hammond's a really interesting name, but yeah. It seems to me she's set up to be the successor for Popovich with the Spurs, and I know Brad Stevens has spoken highly of her in the past, and I'm sure he meant it, but he also speaks highly pretty much of every coach he encounters, so I think we might be exaggerating his praise there to the point that some people thought, oh, he talked highly of her, she's going to be the hire. I don't think that's the case. But Jason Kidd's not a good coach. He's not a great guy.
No.
I think that would be a pretty big mistake if they even gave him consideration.
Is this a long-term job, do you think, for Brad Stevens?
I actually do. Yeah, he's got a son who's going into, I believe, a freshman year of high school, and a daughter who's in fifth or sixth grade, and he's talked a little bit about wanting to be home more often. There's going to be travel with this job, but Danny traveled more than most GMs or presidents of basketball operations do. He loved hitting college games out on the West Coast to go and see his family in Oregon. I don't think Brad would do that much. I think he'd probably leave it to his lieutenants, whether it's the guys who are in the front office now, most likely Austin Ainge, who's been really good about finding unheralded talent for the Celtics. He's the one who really recommended Daniel Tice, among others. I think Austin probably would do a little bit more stuff stateside. But I think a big part of it with Brad is just seeing him being around his family more and not going on all these road trips the coach goes on.
Who's in trouble, based on what Brad Stevens, the coach, saw? Who may now be looking at a ticket out of town with Brad Stevens, the GM?
I just hope this doesn't mean Semi Ojeleye gets a 10-year, $80 million contract here. I could never understand why he was playing with some of the young guys at times, but Brad seemed to have a lot of trust in him. I don't think there's anything drastic that happens unless they can work out a trade for Kemba Walker, because Marcus Smart is somebody that Brad really loves. It's genuine. He is not lip service. He really thinks and finds him to be a guy who makes his team better with his personality behind the scenes, with his intensity on the court, even though he wasn't quite the same player this year on the defensive end. I would be surprised if he moved, and that's the guy a lot of people seem to think would go. I would say the Kemba's a possibility if they could, you know, if they decided they wanted to get out of that deal and take back a bad contract, maybe throw in a first-round pick to make it happen somewhere else. But I really don't think there's a ton of movement with the quality players on this roster. I know this is a really frustrating season for a lot of reasons, but they don't have a ton of wiggle room under the salary cap, and I think this genuine belief with this team and with this organization that what really happened was they get screwed over by injuries, and if they have the whole group together again next year, they're going to be a really good team. And I think Brad probably falls into that camp and won't do anything too drastic unless an opportunity presents itself that does not look obvious right now.
Were you surprised at all that the Patriots weren't in or don't appear to be in on the Julio Jones chase?
A little bit, although the age thing always kind of jumped out at me. I mean, he's 32 years old. Moss was still in his 20s when they made that trade. And receivers tend to lose it pretty fast. You can't find too many cases of a guy having a rejuvenation at that position in his 30s. And the guys they tended to bring in that were a little bit older didn't last very long here, whether it's Torrey Holt or Reggie Wayne or Andrew Hawkins, guys they brought into camp, Eric Decker. When they seemed to be on their last legs, it turned out that they were. And Jones isn't to that level, but he did fall off last year because of the injuries. And it seems to me this is going to be a case of the Titans getting a really good season out of him, maybe two, but then the fall off comes. And I just don't think the Belichick wanted to commit that kind of money to a player at that age right now.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Boston.com. Chad, we thank you. As always, I'll send my surplus heat down your way so you can enjoy it around the pool there.
That sounds great, Rich. I'll take it. Beat the snow.
All right. We'll talk with you soon. Thank you, Chad.
See you, man.
Chad Finn of the Globe on Downtown.